We'll call the meeting to order for the Capital Investment Committee for Tuesday, March 10th. And the first item on the agenda is House File 918, Representative Hausman.
And Madam Chair, I will move House File 918 for possible, be held over for possible inclusion in a bonding bill.
And to your bill, Representative Hausman.
Members, this is a department bill, and so I'm not even going to do talking points. I am simply going to say this is a state deal bond sale provisions, and Kathy Cardell will give you the rationale for the bill.
Ms. Cardell, would you identify yourself for the tape and proceed?
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Kathy Cardell, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Treasury and Debt Management at Minnesota Management and Budget. As Representative Hausman indicated, House File 918 is an agency initiative bill. It is designed to amend certain provisions relating to the issuance of state general obligation bonds in order to achieve a variety of objectives. The first point is it would allow the state to use either a public or competitive sale for bonds or a private, also known as negotiated, sale for bonds. This is important because since market disruptions began back in the fall of 2008, as some of you or many of you may recall, we had to cancel a competitive sale of general obligation bonds in October because there simply was no competitive bond sale market. No bidders were willing or interested in submitting a bid to buy our bonds. Using or allowing for an alternative negotiated sale when market conditions are difficult is going to be important, in my opinion, to ensure that we have access to the municipal market if these conditions persist. In addition, as some of you are aware, there's another bill that's been introduced, the Minnesota First Bond, which I'm not sure if it's been introduced, I shouldn't say that. I've seen the bill. It has been introduced, thank you. Which would encourage the sale of state general obligation bonds to Minnesota investors. A negotiated or private sale is the only mechanism in which that objective can also be accomplished, because quite simply, selling bonds to a large number of individuals is a labor-intensive process which requires that mechanism or that method of sale to be successful. One other comment just about the market, and I know that Representative Hausman and Representative Solberg and I were talking a little bit about this before we started. Since the fall of 2008, retail buyers have been the only consistently active participants in the municipal bond market, and we frankly need the ability to continue to tap those investors to purchase our bonds going forward. Institutional buyers are not consistently participating for whether it's liquidity reasons or simply an aversion to whatever it is that they perceive as risk. They are not consistently participating. The other pieces of the proposed amendments will permit the state to do a couple of things. The first is to utilize a financing structure currently not available, which is a crossover refunding. It's simply a variation of an advanced refunding structure, which we can't use currently. It will also give us the flexibility to determine how any premium that we receive on bonds can be utilized, depending on the market conditions at the time of sale. At the present time, we are required to deposit the premium into the bond fund, and it's used to make the payment on the next part of the debt service fund transfer. But there may be circumstances whereby it might be more efficient to use the premium to reduce the size of the bond issue itself and not pay interest on that larger amount of bonds over the 20-year period. But we would have to make that determination on a case-by-case basis.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, to that point, mm-hmm. At what point would you make that determination?
We would,
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, what we would have to do with each bond sale is look at our existing debt service fund appropriation
and look at what the impact would be of either reducing the size of the issue by the amount of the premium received versus looking at retaining it in the bond fund and make certain that we would not be going over what the appropriated amount is for debt service.
But I don't know if I asked the answer to my question. Do you make that determination before you put the bonds out or after you put the bonds out? And if it's after, how soon after?
Ms. Cargill.
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, we would make that determination probably the same day that we take bids for the bonds, because it would not be a difficult calculation to do, and it would be reflected in the final closing documents when we settle and receive the proceeds.
Representative Solberg?
Well, the other thing is how that is reported and tracked to the legislative process.
Ms. Cardell?
I know we've had, Representative Solberg, we've had some preliminary discussions about how we would reflect it in the accounting system, because we would recognize that we would have to do that. I will confess that I don't know the specifics of that, but my accounting folks have told me that they feel that that's workable.
Thank you. Any further questions from the... Did you have more testimony, Ms. Cardell?
Madam Chair, the only other comment that I would make is that these amendments would make the state general obligation bond sale provisions consistent with all other state debt issuers, such as the Public Facilities Authority, the Housing Finance Agency, and the Office of Higher Education. And we also would have then the same flexibility that local government issuers already have in the state. So that's all.
Representative Hausman, any final comments?
And Madam Chair, well, mine is not so... I actually have a question about my own bill. I think the most potentially controversial part of this is that issue of public or private sale. And if I understood Ms. Cardell correctly, that one of the arguments was that in October you canceled the bond sale because nobody was going to buy the bonds, and then you sold in January. But in January we observed that bond sale, as some of you may remember, and I sort of recall we didn't know whether anyone would pop up there. But how did the department know in October that nobody was bidding?
Ms. Cardell.
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, in October, we were following the market conditions by talking to other issuers and following what was on the competitive sale calendar and watching people pulling scheduled competitive sales one by one off of the calendar. And we talked then with folks on their underwriting desks to ascertain what was going on, and their comment to us was, we're not interested in putting in a bid. Nobody knows where the market is. We aren't convinced that we can sell a bond if we put in a bid. And so in October, that was what we observed happening in the market. In January, Representative Hausman is exactly right. That was a risk. But we have been, again, observing the market over the first couple of weeks of January, mm-hmm. and saw some other examples of issues not as large as the issue that we sold, but that did enter the market, the competitive market, successfully. And so we felt reasonably good, and even as late as the Friday before that bond sale, we saw that there were a number of firms that had at least signed up through the internet bidding parameters that they intended to submit bids, and then we followed up with them by phone, and they confirmed that as well. So we did not know what they were going to bid, but we at least were comfortable that someone was going to bid, or more than one firm, several firms.
Representative Leader has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Cardell, I'm not that familiar with bond sales, but if you're canceling a bond, do you charge for a proposal when they come in, or do they get reimbursed for filling out a proposal if you cancel a bond at the last minute? Because they have an expense in preparing the proposal.
Ms. Cardell.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader, we actually canceled that sale well enough in advance where we did not reach the point where we actually took bids where a potential buyer of those bonds would have had any sort of risk or financial liability. So on the competitive bond sale, we canceled that sale a couple weeks in advance of when we had originally intended to accept the bid, so nobody was put at any risk.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam President. Is that customary? Do you cancel a bond sale occasionally when it's the date of the bid opening? And if that happens, do you reimburse then?
Ms. Cardell.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader, my experience has been that typically we've never canceled bond sales except in situations where we were looking to refinance bonds to save costs, in which case sometimes the market has moved away from us, interest rates have risen, but most of the time we always strive to not cancel it at the last minute. And again, I've only been at the state for a little over a year. In my prior experience, we've always canceled sales for former clients where we were not incurring any costs for any potential buyers of those bonds.
Any further questions from the committee? If not, anyone in the audience care to comment? If not, Representative Hausman renews her motion that House File 918 be held over for possible inclusion in the capital investment bill. Thank you.
Members, you sometimes pick up interesting things at other committees, and I think it was in Representative Murphy's committee that when the Public Facilities Authority was there, they talked about their ability to bond and that they are AAA bond rated. And as I recall, they said they actually sold their last bonds for 2%. So for some reason, they did even better than our state deal a while ago. So we now have Representative Scalzi.
Ms. Chair and members of the committee, I would move House File 919 to be held over for possible inclusion in the capital investment bill. And this is an agency bill, as was the last one. And I have with me here today Mike Roloff, who's the Executive Budget Officer of the Minnesota Management and Budget Office, to explain the bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Mike Roloff. I'm from the Management and Budget. I'm an Executive Budget Coordinator there. The bill before you is our attempt to kind of use almost 10 years of experience in working with local, evaluating local projects, working with them once they have been funded, seeing what some of the problem areas are, seeing what some of the subjective areas of the criteria are, and trying to improve them, modernize them so that they aren't quite as burdensome and that they supply more the information that you as decision makers need. In your packets, you've got a very brief handout that talks about the purpose and the background and the proposal before you. And probably the most important is the table on the bottom that kind of lays out what is in House File 919 and how does it compare to 16A86 subdivision 3, the old evaluation criteria that would then be repealed as a part of this provision. One of the things, I guess just one of the general things that I would say about the whole thing is that we're suggesting that we step away from kind of an MMB evaluation of the local project and just provide the information to you unfiltered. Part of that is the difference we have, the difference between the decision maker role and the advisor role, and also because of some of the subjectivity within there and some of the administrative burden. But you'll also see some things addressed in there that you maybe or maybe familiar after you heard the legislative auditor come and talk to you about some of the problems that they have discovered or some of the issues that they had before them. So just kind of walking down the list, first and foremost, we want to make it very clear who is going to be the entity that owns the capital assets. Of all of the things that probably create difficulties on the back end of the bonding project is when we, and you have experienced this, when you write the language that it's going to somebody because they submitted the bonding request, and they say, oh, but it's really going to be owned by so-and-so. And then you have to come back and amend legislation to change the ownership within the law. Second thing is we want to have the local government submit a clear list of bondable activities within the project, and that includes some examples of the key words or the magic words, I think, that you talked about, design, construction, acquisition, those kinds of things. Again, to make sure that what's being presented to you is a full picture of what's happening with that project. The next one seems like kind of a minor change. It talks about that local financing is provided to the maximum extent possible. We would change that around to show the full extent of the match that is being provided. Trying to judge whether a city or not is putting the maximum match in that is possible for them is difficult for us. But it's easy to look at a project and say, it has this much match. And I think that's the information that's important to you. And the other thing that's an addition there that we think is important is it clearly identifies that match has to be non-state funding. We've had a number of instances where they've asked if they could match a bonding project with a PFA loan or something like that. And we operate with it. It has to be non-state funding. There are a couple of things there that talk about state mission and also regional and statewide significance. Those are really difficult and subjective and really more for your role as decision makers than they are for us. I mean, we may very clearly come up and say, this doesn't appear to be an important state role to us, but it may be to you. And also, in reality, we tend to have a lot of disagreements about local, regional, and statewide significance. It's usually presented a level higher than we would give.
It almost sounds, Mr. Roloff, as though you're saying it's happening anyway, so let's just change the language.
Yeah, and what really is the key here is what is the public purpose of this project? And so what we would like them to do for us and for you would be to delineate their case that this is an important public purpose.
But it does, whereas we've often said projects have a regional or statewide significance and people portray it, when it says public purpose, that could be a local public purpose.
It's correct. Even if it does have a regional or, let's say, it, for example, it has a regional significance, or let's say we judge that it doesn't have a regional significance, that doesn't eliminate it from consideration. It still goes to you, and it may be that the local significance of that project is very important to you, and you choose to recommend it for funding anyway. So it's kind of the difference, kind of an advisory opinion versus an exclusive opinion. I mean, this isn't an evaluation committee that cuts, this isn't an evaluation criteria that cuts projects out of consideration.
Representative Mallory, you have a
question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Roloff, the next one, where it says new or additional operating subsidies, does that mean
state, or does that also include local?
Mr. Ola.
That's a very good question. I got to look at the language.
State.
The language in the bill says state. I forgot to put that in the chart. And then the last ones, Section 5, 6, and 7 in the old language, does it expand a state role into a new policy area? Does the state funding create significant inequities between local jurisdictions? Does this project compete with another similar project in another district? We chose to leave those out because they're very difficult things for us to evaluate, and when we ask the local government about them, first let's go to number five. Is it a state role that should be pursued? That's really your decision. And then does it create inequities or does it create competitive imbalances? We've always asked that question about local projects, and virtually everyone has assured us that it doesn't. That a convention center in this regional center will not conflict with a convention center already funded in this region. So it's not been very useful to us, that information.
Did you have a follow-up, Representative Mullery? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Mr. Roloff, it would appear to me that there have been instances where the legislature has passed a bond bill. The intent was clear, and your department refuses to fund. Is that correct?
You're all off.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative. Could you repeat the question?
The legislature now passes a bond bill signed by the governor, and it comes to whoever should pay the bond back to the local entity or whomever has the bill. And your department refuses to pay the bond based, would appear to me that you're overriding legislative intent.
To let the bond? The department does not let the bond.
They let the bond. The bonds have been sold, but they don't reimburse the local unit.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not familiar with that situation at all.
Can you cite an example?
Okay. I'll speak with him.
Okay. He'll have a side conversation.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's an example there.
Normally, if the law is passed and we sell the bonds, it happens, I guess.
Madam Chair?
Representative Solberg.
Just a little question on pre-design of a project. That's current law, and actually you're continuing that current law.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean if the unit of government has not spent money on some kind of a pre-design, and what is the extent of the pre-design that we shouldn't be considering it? Or is it just one of the criteria?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, we would normally address that when we get that information from them in July. You know, if we would look at the project and decide whether or not we thought it required a pre-design. We want them to certify whether or not they've had them. And then we would make sure they go through the process if it's necessary.
Because, Madam Chair, the reason I asked the question is not all projects would need a pre-design to be able to be
That's
go
correct.
Forward.
That's correct.
Mr. Murphy?
Mr. Rolla, does this change, or a local project, what does that mean?
Mr. Rolla.
A project recommended by a local unit of government, usually city, county, could be school district, could be local housing development authority, I guess.
So just one city or one county? It wouldn't have any impact on a regional park?
Drola.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, it would be dependent upon who would be considered the owner of that park. How it was proposed to be funded or how it had been funded in the past, I would imagine. I would think normally, and pardon me, this is my lack of knowledge in the area, if it was a regional regional park that would probably have some kind of a joint powers board where one county was maybe taking the lead or something. But I'm not certain.
I would, Representative Murphy, follow up.
It does. One county does have a lead on a regional park. So it could affect that.
Then I think it would be fine that that county would apply on behalf of them.
And these would be just the capital project grants to political subdivisions, not agencies.
That's correct.
This changes nothing about agencies requests. And how much of this was driven by the legislative auditor's report?
Some of it was, Madam Chair, some of it was, a lot of it was driven by our experience over the years, and some of that, our experience over the years, informed some of the legislative auditor inquiries, and as we worked through some of those issues. But things like ownership of the property, specificity of the language in terms of what is being funded, non-state match, all of those would have been things that the legislator auditor would have dealt with. I'm trying to remember if the legislative auditor looked at any local projects. Okay, they did.
I do find myself wishing that some of those political subdivisions would be in the audience today. You sort of hope they're paying attention to the subject matter of bills, because in this instance, that obviously has been a process that many people have gone through. There's been a certain level of frustration about it, but they know what works and what doesn't, and one would sort of wish that there had been attention paid by some of those who are actually going to go through this process,
and Madam,
I hope there are not unintended consequences here.
Madam Chair, they have gotten better over time. We have gotten better over time in asking for information, but there are still some that we go all the way through the process, even to the point of maybe considering passing legislation, and then all of a sudden something new is revealed to us about ownership, or, oh, I really wanted to do this instead.
Representative Anderson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, I guess, reducing the criteria for these projects, does it lessen the process, or make it less significant than by doing this?
Some of them surprised me a little bit, but they must be based on something in your experience that...
Representative, mostly what we did was drop the ones that we thought were really very subjective. And it comes from a number of years of us kind of in our recommendation say, no, we wouldn't recommend this project because we think it's only got a local significance. Yet that project being very important to the legislature and making its way into the process. And so things like that are subjective, we don't see a whole lot of point in spending a lot of time evaluating it.
Further presentation, Mr. Roloff? Or have
no.
You have concluded. And I see no further questions, so... Representative Scalzi, House File 919 will be held over for possible inclusion in a capital investment bill. Thank you. Oh, Representative Silver.
Just a question. How many people are in the department that does an evaluation of the projects at the present time?
Mr. Roloff.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, the way that we do this is most of the local projects come in a number of general areas. They either come in the economic development area, the transportation area, the natural resources area, or there might be a few others. And then what we do is we ask the executive budget officers who work in those areas to get to know those projects, evaluate those projects, pass it to the capital budget coordinator, and eventually into the...
So is there just one person in the coordinator, Madam Chair?
formerly there was one person. That person is not there anymore. We hope to bring that person on board.
Well, the reason I asked the question is because you're making the process a lot simpler, and there's no evaluation. It's just kind of, are these things done and passing them on to the legislature without ranking them? So there should be less amount of administrative expense with this particular process.
Mr. Ola.
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, that is true. The other thing I guess I would point out is that even though we do the evaluation, and the evaluation is required by statute, we are required to pass on all of the information that the local government supplies to us in that initial filing anyway.
I see no further questions. Thank you, Representative Kelsey.
Thank you, Ms. Chair.
And Representative Yunich moves House File 562 for possible inclusion. Representative Lucinius, are you calling forward Sally Rams from MINSU, or are you just presenting?
I was just going to present. If you remember a conversation earlier this year, we were looking at this language, and the question was raised in HEPRA. Can you fund, or within HEPRA, can you fund energy improvements? And folks said, implicitly, we think you can. All this is doing is making explicit what people thought you could do implicitly. And since energy efficiency is high on our priority list these days, I thought it was better to put it in statute so that it remains in statute. And that's all this does, making explicit something that people thought was implicit.
Questions of Representative Genius. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Genius, I think it's a good idea. My only concern might be that you'd be a little bit more specific as to the energy efficiency, the current best practices at time of design or time of installation, only because they can change quickly enough. And it's a small thing, you can deal with it as you like as this bill moves forward.
Well, as I was thinking about it, when it was designed, because that's when we would see it.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, Representative Lugenius, would energy efficiency improvements include using HEPA to fund a wind energy plan?
Representative
I had not thought so.
Okay, well, I wanted that on the tape.
Okay.
I just wanted to know. Okay. Then the other question I do have is, since we're doing this with HEPA, why would we not be also including the CAFRA statutes in the same with state buildings besides higher education buildings?
Representative Solberg, from my point of view, it would be a good idea. The reason I brought it up was because of the discussion we had in this committee on this particular section of law. Representative Hansen is going to bring forth this section of law for DNR, and I'm looking at that section and saying, and why wouldn't we do that there too? So I would agree with you, but that's...
Well, Madam Chair, I don't want to draw staff another bill. Just get an amendment somehow.
Okay.
You do that.
When we get to, I'll add that to Representative Guinness's agenda. You heard a suggestion over there.
We will amend. I'm glad to do that.
No further questions. Then thank you, Representative Guinness. This bill will be held over for possible inclusion. And Representative Hansen has a delete all.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen moves House File 983, and then Representative Hansen moves the delete all, and that we will act on, just so that that's in the public record, that that's the one before us.
I move the DE2 amendment, delete
and
all amendment.
Do you want to just quickly explain to us why the delete all?
Madam Chair, members, this bill and then the delete all come from kind of the same sitting and listening in the committee here and listening to Heber and looking at the unique situations that we have with natural resources. We have unique capital assets, and looking at taking that same model that we have with Heber and applying that to natural resources. So delete all, and we've had some challenges drafting the bill and drafting it to the correct area. So the delete all clarifies, after working with research staff and management and budget and the Department of Natural Resources to get the exact correct language. We thought we had the exact correct language, but we will have to do a little oral amendment as well. I do have Mr. Meyer here who can talk a little bit on detail if that's needed. And I don't know, Madam Chair, if you want us to do
We'll just act on the, just so that we're certain we have to delete everything. To get in the bill, get the bill in the form the author desires. All in favor of DE2, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. And DE2 is what we're considering. Mr. Myers.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for this opportunity. Representative Hansen brought to our attention the bill that he had introduced. And in discussing that with him, he did express it was his desire to create a HEPR-like account for the department. After reviewing the language, it was determined that it needed some amendments. This is, I think, pretty close to where we need to be. There's one small change we would like to see within the bill. Basically, it codifies in statute our current asset preservation practices and allows that to be expanded somewhat for our unique capital assets that we have, such as parks, trails, bridges, things of that nature, along with our buildings as well. So we do appreciate the interest. We did have the opportunity to discuss this with the Management Budget Services and also fiscal and legal staff, and I think everybody is able to support this language at this point in time.
And you said the change you had has been incorporated?
Nope, I need to make the oral amendment.
Okay, all right.
So the oral amendment would be on page 1, line 6, after resources, insert owns and delete physical plants and insert capital assets.
And members, we do have a copy. We just didn't have it, or was it? Okay. But I think we can. I think we can just read that for members. So, page one. I'm sorry. Did you complete it?
I did not complete it. And then on page 1, line 7, delete physical plants and insert capital assets owned and.
Does everyone understand? Page 1, line 6, after resources, insert owned and delete physical plants and insert capital assets. Page 1, line 7, delete physical plants and insert capital assets owned and my understanding is the department has had requested that change. Everyone understand that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries, and that is now the bill before us. Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, on line 1.23, and I understand the need to not use these type of funds for building a building. But sometimes in a remodeling project, it is cheaper to make an addition or as you go through than it is to do the replacement. And it looks to me like that both in HEPA and in CAPRA and in this one, we are restricting that ability. I think that's what we're doing, or construct buildings or other facilities. Help me feel comfortable that you would have the ability under this to make a small addition if that's what makes sense on a particular building.
Particularly once you got into the project.
Right,
Mr. Myers.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, that certainly would be our intent, and I think we might have to make sure that this language will allow us to do that, because that is exactly what we need to do in some of our facilities in our cases. So I don't know if staff could help us draft that. Is it Is the intent for this to be laid over, Madam
yes.
Chair? I don't know if members would be comfortable with us trying to work with committee staff and trying to come up with a solution, or if people have a solution right now.
Well, Representative Eugenie has had her hand up. I don't know if you were speaking to this.
I was. I would have to construct new buildings. Would that solve the problem?
Well,
Representative Philbert.
And I don't want to open it up to the point where, you know, we got an old building, and then we're going to use this to build another great big building, just have that as one wall of it. I'm just talking about a flexibility. Maybe it's built into it already, but sometimes when you get into remodeling, it's cheaper to make some changes in it.
There might be an audience member who would like to comment.
Madam Chair, members, I'd like to bring up Kath Auska from our Management Resources Division. She can help us answer this question.
Welcome to the committee. You understand the question?
Madam Chair, I do.
Please identify.
I'm Kath Auska, Facility Manager for the Department of Natural Resources. And Representative, I believe the answer to your question is certainly before in our planning, we would ascertain whether a remodel or a complete new building would be the most cost-effective way to go. If it's remodel, if it's an asset preservation project, then the asset preservation funds would be available for that. If, however, we would determine that a new building would be the more prudent way to go, then that becomes a capital budget request, and we would use different funds, funds for that.
I'm sure I understand that in the planning process, but how about when you're into the project and you discover something that, you know, where it's cheaper to do it another way instead of preserving? Does the current law give you the flexibility to do that?
An unanticipated issue, in other words, after the project.
Add 100 feet square feet is better than and cheaper for some reason, you know.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I believe that what we would be, there is language in the asset preservation language in 16B.307 that indicates if you are going to have, for example, you're putting in a new boiler or something, and in that case, you need to expand the footprint of the building to accommodate the new boiler based on its size, you are allowed to do that in that case.
I do recall the day we had the legislative auditor's report that whole question about have we built in flexibility to do something common sense?
Yeah, right.
And is that one of the issues getting some of these projects in trouble? And I suspect that's the spirit in which you're...
You hit the nail on the head.
Madam Chair, my intent would be to provide flexibility. And an example I could see is maybe you get into a building and you discover some hidden mold or something where you'd have to take out a wall and then expand that. I mean, we want to make sure that we're using common sense when we're working with our assets.
Further questions? Mr. Meyer, did you have further presentation or to the author?
I know that Representative Wagenius had raised the issue of if we have the same basic language and standards as she has in House File 562 for keeper, if we're going to be correcting that in keeper and CAPRA, maybe we want to do that, and I would...
And I think the idea today is, because we're holding these over, to debate the spirit of these two bills, because we have some time, if there's wordsmithing.
Members, think over that, and we've got the bill into the shape that I would like it to be in. I think there's issues raised with the other bills that we may want to look at this one and others as well, so people can look at it as it's laid over for possible inclusion.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Meyer, anything more?
No, thank you.
Okay. Anything more from the
thank you.
Author? And any further questions? If not, this bill, too, will be held over for possible inclusion. We're going to end early, members. And you may have noticed one bill was dropped from the agenda. We discovered it really was a tax issue and not a bonding issue, and it was referred, or will be. I think we need a motion for that. It doesn't go through your committee, so we'll have a motion to refer that to taxes. And we have a few more bills on our next agenda. And I should tell you a little bit about the House File 827. I can recall Representative Lanning and Representative Mahoney and Representative Junkie in a discussion in the last year or so when the issue of suppose you had only preliminary engineering involved in the project, and we were told that is enough to forever, that there's a state interest in that, and should there be a change in use? Does anyone recall this discussion? Well, where it becomes a specific question on an ongoing basis, Representative Murphy, is library grants, because they are always small. And so in talking to some of the library and department people, there are differing opinions about what other states do. After the bonds have been paid off for a small library facilities grant, does the state forever after have an interest in the property? And so that's the discussion in this particular one. We're going to have an amendment where we just limit it to libraries to raise the question about when they are consistently small grants. So it'll be discussion of really policy in one instance in Ramsey County. It's what raised it, but they've already paid the money back, so it's really not relating to that. But we just do think that it's worth this committee having a conversation about it. It may not be anything that goes forward, but that's the trigger for that particular one. Representative or Senator Langseth at 5:30 today will have his bonding bill, and I don't know if they'll be voting on it today, but so there will be discussion about bonding as of today. We're part of a team here, and we're still waiting for Target. So, Representative Solberg is zero. I think that is. Thank you, Representative Leader. Move minutes of Thursday, March 5th. Any changes, additions, corrections? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Motion carried, minutes are approved. I think that's it. Meeting is adjourned.